we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. I am your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined here by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hello.
Sinead Saunders.
Hello.
And Shauna Smith.
Hi there.
This is 100.5 FM CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, October the 21st, and today we are discussing fur. We will have a feature interview with lawyer Camille Labchuk of Animal Justice Legislative Fund and Adrian Nelson of the Fur Bearer Defenders nonprofit organization. This is the time of year that we see more fur showing up on people's jackets on the streets, namely the inhumane Canada Goose jackets. Sinead, you have a story for us on this topic.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because I knew that we had this show coming up this week. And of course, you know, once it's on your mind, you go outside and then all you can see everywhere is where is people wearing fur and wondering why, you know. And so anyway, I was seeing some music on Monday night, and a woman came up to me in the bar, and she just throws this fuzzy puffball in my hand and goes, "Feel this, isn't it so soft?" And I said, "Oh," because, you know, it was obviously, it felt like one of those fuzzy rabbit feet or, you know, some piece of an animal's tail or something that people have been just pinning to their bags or whatever, some fashion thing. And she saw the look on my face and she said, "Oh, do you think it's real?" And I said, "Well, I hope it's not real for the rabbit's sake." and she said, "Oh, well, that's the thing, is that it's fake, but, you know, it feels really real, doesn't it?" And I didn't really know, but I just said, "Yeah, sure. Well, that's good. You know, it's weird, isn't it, how people will wear the feet of animals just as good luck or as fashion or whatever."
I used to have a rabbit's foot as a child, and I remember feeling it against my face and feeling how nice and soft it is, and I remember not really realizing what it was. It's pretty sick once you think about it.
Exactly. And that's the thing with this woman, is that she heard me start to talk about that, and she said, "Oh yeah, you know, I used to have all this leather and all these vintage fur things that I used to wear, but now I don't anymore because I get death stares from people." And I said, "Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can understand where they're coming from, right? Because why would you harm an animal and take their limbs or their fur if you didn't need to, just for something so frivolous as a fashion accessory?" And she said, "Oh, I never thought of it like that before. That's really interesting. I'm gonna look at it in a whole new way now." And I thought that was particularly telling, because obviously the shame tactics that activists use did affect her to a degree. She said that she stopped wearing those products because people were looking at her funny and giving her funny looks. But at the same time, she did not understand. She wasn't educated on why. She just saw the shame and thought, "Oh no, well, people are going to complain if I've got that stuff on me now." But she wasn't educated, and so all it takes is pointing out, you know, like, you wouldn't do that to your dog or your cat, and, you know, it's important to, as well, it's just, you know, shaming people is one thing, but we have to remind them that animals are individuals deserving of respect, and it's not okay to just exploit them for no reason, no good reason.
Exactly, because if they don't know why, they're not going to be doing it anymore. They might go back to doing it. So it's important as activists for us to not only, you know, shame them a little bit, but also educate them on why they shouldn't be doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that doesn't even work. I mean, some people get angry even if you are taking that peaceful approach with them, where you're just saying, "Hey, just in case you didn't know, that is a dead coyote on your Canada Goose jacket. And I actually have a picture on my phone that I keep with me when I'm out walking in the wintertime on purpose, so that when I do see somebody wearing one, I can show them a picture of a coyote in a leg hold trap. And that's my intro into the whole story on how those coats are made." And sometimes people are receptive and some people get very mad, even though I'm being peaceful about it. So then I just that's when I turn to shaming. I just say, you know, it's really too bad that somebody like you has caused the death of an animal for your own vanity and the status symbol jacket that I'm seeing all over the place. And honestly, there are times when I'm out walking and I will see 20 Canada Goose jackets within my eyesight at one time, and it just drives me crazy. And, you know, speaking of the even more frivolous things like the rabbit foot, Sinead, I was downtown last weekend doing the Earthlings experience, which is where we stand with TVs showing slaughterhouse footage to the public, handing out vegan food, and trying to talk to people about making compassionate choices in their diets. And a girl came by who was wearing two animal tails, one hanging off her purse and one hanging off her belt. And I couldn't get close enough to her to ask her about it because I was tethered to a battery pack with my TV, but her friend was close enough for me to talk to. And I called him over and I said, I can't believe your friend is wearing animal tails and I can't ask her about it, but can you offer me some insight on why she's wearing those? They serve no purpose and two animals died for them. And on top of that, it looks ridiculous. And he got really mad at me. There was some swearing from him. And you know, like, I've seen these things, and I've also seen these silly little fur pom-poms on people's purses. And these are just such useless little trinkets that look so stupid, and an animal died for them. And it's, you know, at one point last winter, I actually stopped going downtown because I would end up in tears with all the fur that I was seeing. And it feels like such a hopeless battle for us activists to try to get people to be more compassionate. I really just don't understand the logic.
Mm-hmm. And you get people saying, well, you know, people have been wearing fur for hundreds, thousands of years and et cetera, et cetera. But we're not talking about survival here. We're talking about people wearing fur when it's absolutely unnecessary. It's fashion, and it's not to help people survive. It's a vanity thing.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. There's no reason to have it in 2016. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like we don't have heat or insulation in our homes. Like, we can survive without it, and there's polyester and something really exciting plant-based that's going to be later on the show and news.
Yeah, and we were talking before also about the issue of vintage fur. I personally have a lot of friends who will say, oh, well, what do you think about used fur and leather? You know, this is an old, gorgeous fur coat, you know, from the 50s. And I just love it so much. And I'm just going, well, I mean, yes, the animal is already dead. But if we were talking about it in terms of cats or dogs or humans, you know, how would you feel if you were wearing a coat that was made of the skin of someone who was abused and tortured for the purpose of this coat? And just because it happened 50 years ago, it doesn't make me personally feel any more comfortable with wearing that.
I think that supports the monkey see, monkey do mentality that results in trends. And I'm just going to talk about Canada Goose jackets again, because that is why they're so popular, because people keep seeing them out there. And Canada Goose jackets have been around for a long time, but it hasn't been until the last couple of years that they've been so trendy.
Mm-hmm. And even, you were saying, even news reporters are wearing them on TV. Is that right?
I have seen news reporters wearing them, and I send them emails, which they don't get responses. Also, the Empress Hotel, but the Fairmont Hotel downtown Vancouver, that is their new staff jacket.
Yeah, I've seen them wear it.
So I just wanted to talk a bit about how fur shaming actually, I've seen it work in mainstream media. And this was actually just a couple weeks ago that I witnessed this on television, national television. It was the Dancing with the Stars show. I don't know if anyone else saw this and maybe had a thought as to what I did as well. As an animal advocate myself, I thought, wow, I can't believe I just saw that. This is live television and they couldn't erase what was just said. So they were showing some kind, I just sort of had it on in the background, and I think they were showing some kind of a dance clip, some people dancing, and the woman dancing was wearing a fur. I didn't really notice at the time. And there were the two commentators, Erin Andrews, who's a popular sports broadcaster, and she's one of the hosts of Dancing with the Stars, and Tom Bergeron, who's been on for a long time, very seasoned host. And at the end of the dance, Erin said, oh, that was beautiful, and she was wearing a beautiful fur. And right away, Tom Bergeron said, "Oh, I'm sure it was an imitation fur." He said it just like that. And then at that time, Erin gasped and basically looked like she had been, you know, hit in the headlights. And then she went, "Oops, sorry." Like that, like, "Uh-oh, I just made a mistake. It's actually a big faux pas. I shouldn't have said that," someone insinuating that someone was wearing a real fur. I was just surprised to see that. So in this day and age of, you know, we're still seeing people wear furs on the street, like CBC News reporters, Canada Goose, people walking all over the place. It was actually brought up on national television that maybe wearing fur and blatantly and is not something to show off. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, this is where we can talk about a tactic used by activists in Toronto. I've been watching their YouTube videos, and what they do is they go out into the streets and with a camera filming a conversation, they go up to people wearing a fur coat and they say, "Did you know that your coat is made from animal fur? And did you know that they suffered greatly?" And they have a picture of an animal in a trap or in a cage. And then they say, "Would you consider removing that fur collar? You can unzip it right now and we can donate it to an organization that takes in orphaned animals and they make bedding out of it." And I could not believe how many times people do it. And I don't know if it's because they're under pressure and they're on camera.
I think it's because they're under pressure and they're on camera. And people will do, like you said, monkey see, monkey do. Right.
But I don't know about that. I mean, I watched this really awesome activist in the UK. His name is Earthling Ed. He has a YouTube channel. And he basically goes around the UK creating awareness. And I remember I was watching this one video because it started getting cold in the UK about a month ago. And he saw this model walking down. He was wearing this fur jacket. It was like fully fur jacket. And he went up to him and he was like, "Do you realize that you're wearing the body of a dead animal? Like, do you think that's okay?" And the guy that was wearing it, he started getting angry. He was swearing. He's like, "You know what? I don't judge you. You don't need to judge me. Like, just, you know, basically F off." And, you know, Earthling Ed, he followed him with his camera crew and they were like, "Well, we just want to talk to you. We're not being, you know, accusatory. We're not being rude. We just want to know why you're doing this." And the guy was like getting really like irate. And it just goes to show, like, just because someone's under pressure, they don't really care. Like, if they have that level of disconnect, they're going to do what they want. Like, he was so belligerent towards Ed. And it was extremely shocking to see because he was getting so angry and so defensive over something that he shouldn't be doing. And he knows that.
Well, just to add to that, I was reading recently a couple of days ago, and I've read this before. It's psychology. Psychologists know this, and that this is a fact that apparently it's very difficult for a person to suddenly believe something that they, which is totally different than they've believed before. I don't know if you've heard of this before. I'm sure it's some kind of psychological trait that, and it's a common human thing, and it's difficult. I've read about this in Nick Cooney's book about psychology, that it is very difficult for someone just to switch their viewpoint. So in some cases, people are not very open-minded and they will just keep, no matter what, even if the facts don't line up, they will keep going with their preformed opinion.
It's very true. And it's, you know, a little bit sad. About 2 years ago, I decided that I was not going to be so instilled into my beliefs that if I didn't know the source of my thoughts, of my beliefs, then I would no longer believe them. I would be like, "Where did I come up with this thought? Was it propaganda? Was I told to think like this? Where did it come from?" And basically, like, everything that I had a strong belief on, I rooted it back to when I was a child as to when I was taught it. And I was like, "Well, I didn't believe this as an adult, so why should I continue believing it?" So I basically questioned everything I believed in, and I completely changed my perspective. And I think that everyone should take a lesson and also do that, because you don't want to be just thinking things that are not your own beliefs. You've just basically been programmed to think like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is your big chance, so don't blow it.
We're here to present the cutting-edge radio you want to hear. What about a program featuring just local Vancouver bands?
No market for that.
We have an expert on gospel music.
No.
Our public affairs programs dig deep with voices other stations won't touch.
No.
Programs with First Nations hosts?
Sorry, no market for that.
We've got a lot of shows in other languages for people all over the world. Folk music?
You're kidding, right? Who would sponsor that?
Can't make big bucks with programs people want to hear? You have to go to Co-op Radio for that. Community-owned radio. Now at 100.5 FM. The switch is on.
All right, so we've got a couple of events coming up. Friday, October 28th at 7 p.m., what would you do if you found out that your worst nightmares were a reality? A 10-year undercover investigation reveals horrors beyond imagination. There is a super mysterious Halloween horror screening happening at the YWCA on Friday, October 28th. They're not saying what the film is exactly, but they are saying that they will pay you $10 to watch till the end of the film. So you don't pay to get in to see this movie, they pay you $10 if you can make it till the end. Seating and cash is guaranteed for the first 100 attendees, and snacks are provided. This is at 535 Hornby Street, which is the YWCA, and again, this is a screening to shed some light on the horrors of animal exploitation.
And vegans should bring their friends. That's what I've been told. Yes. About this mysterious film screening.
Yes, this is very much a screening for everybody, as many people as possible. You can find out more information on their Facebook page at Halloween Horror Vancouver 2016. Also that weekend, Sunday, October 30th, there is a screening of the new documentary Blood Lions at the Rio. And we had the director of Blood Lions on the show last week. It's a really great documentary. This is its Canadian premiere. And the film uncovers the realities about the multi-million dollar predator breeding and canned lion hunting industries in South Africa. Director Bruce Young will be in attendance. There will be a Q&A and a panel discussion after the film. And this is a matinee screening, so the doors are at 12 p.m. and the show is at 12:30 p.m. Tickets are $14 in advance, $18 at the door, and because this is at the Rio, it's actually a 19-plus event.
And if you want to listen to the interview that we did with Bruce Young last week, you can listen to it on our website at animalvoices.org.
And please do, because it's very informative, especially if you can't make it to the screening, but hopefully you can make it. You can find out more information on that event at the Rio Theatre's website at riotheatre.ca. If you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
And now for news. So we actually have a couple of great stories today. First, how a Quebec company used a weed to create a one-of-a-kind winter coat. They decided to transform what is considered a pesky weed, called milkweed, into insulation in the place of our Canadian geese. What has taken years of research has produced a product that rivals traditional down and polyester. And a bonus is that more milkweed will be planted, which means more food for monarch butterflies, which I'm sure that most of you know are actually endangered species. Manufacturers actually have decided to avoid harvesting milkweed until the monarchs migrate to make sure that they get their fill of food. Milkweed was considered a pesky weed, despite it being known to have thermal properties. Natalie Morier at Fibers Monarch thought it would be impossible to transform it for industrial use. But John Philippe, the owner of Quartz Company, which is the company that produces the jackets, pounced on the idea and helped it develop, with their trial being successful for the first time last winter. Jackets are limited at the moment because they are being handmade, but they hope to have it being mass-produced by next year. Next, and this is my favorite story today, TripAdvisor to stop selling tickets to many animal attractions. TripAdvisor is one of the world's largest travel websites, and they will no longer be selling these tickets. This decision is the first of its kind by any leading travel booking site. They came to this decision after consulting with animal rights groups, such as PETA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, and many others. They are also going to create a wildlife tourism education portal to inform the site users about animal welfare issues. The reviews for the animal attractions will remain as long as they're monitored and non-violent, but they will be marked with a PAW, meaning Portal for Animal Welfare, that leads to their animal welfare portal. Animal welfare groups are hoping these changes create a ripple effect throughout the travel booking industry. This is such a great win for animal rights.
Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Camille Labchak, an Ottawa-based lawyer and executive director of Animal Justice, Canada's legislative fund, a not-for-profit dedicated to advocating for the humane treatment of animals. Camille has worked to advance the interests of animals for over a decade. As a lawyer, Camille represents individuals and organizations from animal law cases, defends animal advocates, and seeks out litigation that enhances the interests of animals. As an advocate, Camille's work includes documenting the commercial seal kill on Canada's East Coast, exposing cruelty in farming, and campaigns against trophy hunting, circuses, zoos, aquariums, shark finning, puppy mills, and more. She's a frequent lecturer and media commentator on animal issues. Thanks for speaking with us today, Camille.
It's my pleasure. So glad to be here.
Today we're discussing animal welfare laws. With winter approaching, we're once again seeing more people wearing fur-trimmed jackets, namely the very trendy Canada Goose jackets, which range from $600 to $1,000. They're everywhere in Vancouver. Are they popular in Ottawa as well?
Well, frankly, they're popular, becoming more popular right across the country, which is extremely concerning. And, you know, the fact that they're so popular in Vancouver really speaks to the fact that these are not an item that are necessary to keep people warm. Vancouver does not have terribly cold winters, honestly. And, you know, the fact that they're so popular there really just speaks to the fact that they're a fashion item. And what's become concerning to me, and this has been really illuminated in recent years by the efforts of activists on the street who are talking to people wearing fur and telling them about the realities of the fur trade. So many people say, I didn't know I was wearing fur. I had no idea. I thought that fur trim these days on jackets was all fake. And that to me really shows sort of the insidious nature of the fur fashion industry. It's tricking people, frankly, into wearing fur. A lot of people just have no idea that fur is still being worn, and they assume that it was, you know, basically that it went the wayside back in the 80s and 90s when activists did really great campaigns against fur to drive down those markets. Now, I really think companies are tricking people into wearing it.
And last year, your organization, Animal Justice, filed a legal complaint against Canada Goose, asserting that they are engaged in false and misleading advertising related to claims that the coyote fur trim on its jackets comes from humanely trapped animals. Unfortunately, the Federal Competition Bureau, where the complaint was filed, doesn't seem to care. After sitting on Animal Justice's legal complaint for nearly a year, the Bureau finally said that they would not lay charges or take other legal steps to force Canada Goose to back down from their deceptive claims. No explanation, no reasons, and no action. Would you please explain to our listeners why Canada Goose brand is such a cruel company to support?
Well, Canada Goose uses coyote fur trim on its jackets, and to get that coyote fur, what trappers do is trap coyotes in cruel and inhumane leg hold traps and snares. Now, these devices, your listeners have probably seen footage of animals being caught in these horrific devices already on the internet, and it's frankly appalling. The standards for what trappers can legally do to animals in this country are appalling. When it comes to leg hold traps, these are devices that are designed to trap an animal by his or her paw and hold him or her there until the trapper can come to kill that animal, usually by bludgeoning them, sometimes shooting them, but that would put a bullet hole in the fur, so they try not to do that, or strangulation. In some areas of the country, there's no legislated time limit within which trappers have to check these traps. In other places, it could be 24 hours, up to 72 hours. It could be quite a lengthy time. Now, during that period, of course, the animals, they're trapped by the paw and suffering, likely, but also frequently suffering from predation from other animals, from thirst, from hunger, from cold, extreme weather in Canada's snowy winters, and of course, terrified and in fear. And, you know, these traps as well, we've got to remember that the legal standard for what the cruelty that's allowed to happen to animals in these traps is that up to 20% of animals for approved traps can show signs of extreme suffering when caught by the leg or by the paw. And that includes broken skin, broken bones, internal organ damage, and all kinds of horrific suffering. So this is a standard that's legally acceptable. So at the best, what these traps allow for is 1 in 5 animals to experience that horrific suffering as a result of the trap. And then, of course, the cruel waiting period while they wait in agony for a trapper to come in and kill them. And that's just traps. When we talk about snares, these are devices that are designed to strangle an animal. And again, the standards for what strangulation and how quickly that can occur for coyotes in particular is extremely bad. Snares can legally take up to 5 minutes to kill a coyote. Can you imagine being strangled to death slowly while a cruel wire snare constricts over your around your neck for 5 minutes? That's a horrific way to die. So that's what Canada Goose supports. And on their website, they make all kinds of absurd and offensive claims that they adhere to high ethical standards and they really care about the humane treatment of animals. And obviously, this is absolutely false.
And not only the coyote fur, but also what is in the jackets, it's down.
Well, exactly. They use down from birds, and they also use leather on their jackets. So really, it is a trifecta of cruelty: coyotes, birds, and mammals whose leather is used. It's horrifying.
Well, since the Competition Bureau didn't take any action on the legal complaint, what is the next step, if any?
Well, we do have a number of other tricks up our sleeves. We are planning to pursue the Competition Bureau to take further action. Well, take action in the first place since they didn't previously. And we're looking at a number of ways to do that, some of which you may find out about this winter. The other thing we've done is filed an access information request for the Competition Bureau's records to try to get a better idea of why they just don't care about this issue. And they're fighting us on that, so we're appealing to the Information Commissioner. But what's really galling to me about what the Competition Bureau has done is that this summer they released information about the fact that they're going after moose knuckles. Now, your listeners might know that jacket company is one of the competitors to Canada Goose, and they use fur as well on their jackets. They're from foxes. And moose knuckles apparently is making the claim that their jackets are made in Canada when in reality some of the items are made in Vietnam and then they're assembled in Canada. And the Competition Bureau finds this offensive because it might be misleading to consumers, yet they apparently have no problem with Canada Goose lying about their products being humane. So we're, you know, really concerned at this point that the Competition Bureau and authorities in general need to take animal cruelty and false humane claims more seriously.
That's terrible. Most Canadians are surprised to learn that Canada doesn't have very strong animal welfare laws. The recently proposed bill C-246 had aimed to reform the criminal code's treatment of animal cruelty offenses, but it was not supported by Prime Minister Trudeau and his cabinet. Can you give our listeners your opinion on why you think this wasn't supported, and is there hope that one day it will be?
It came as a shock to everybody involved in the fight for stronger animal cruelty laws at the federal level that the Liberal government and Prime Minister Trudeau chose not to support these measures in Bill C-246. This was a private member's bill put forward by Nathaniel Erskine-Smith, who's a great Liberal MP from Toronto. He's a lawyer, really smart MP, and a wonderful person. And he modeled this bill exactly after previous bills that the Liberal government and the Jean Chrétien years had put forward themselves. So very well-respected former justice ministers like Erwin Kotler, like Anne McClellan, like Martin Cochon had put forward this legislation because at that point the Liberal government did care about taking animal cruelty offenses seriously. So this was essentially recycled legislation from a past Liberal government, yet this Liberal government chose to vote it down. So for us, that's a really disturbing signal that this government's not committed to taking animal cruelty issues seriously. The state of the laws is so bad in our country that it's been called the worst in the Western world. The Supreme Court last June, in a case that Animal Justice intervened in, actually said that most bestiality is legal in Canada because our laws are so weak and so outdated and so poorly drafted. And I think it's really concerning to a number of people who voted Liberal on the expectation that they would do more for animals, that they didn't. So what we're really realizing at this point is that industries that oppose doing anything positive for animals, like hunters, like anglers, and some farming groups, they have strong influence over this government. And to get anything passed, animal advocates need to rise up to that level. We need to show the government that we're a powerful force. And that's why we have an initiative called Humane Voters Canada. And this is an election time campaign that encourages people to vote for animal-friendly candidates and helps them do that by telling them who which MPs, which candidates vote animal protection, which party policies actually take animals seriously. And we're going to be ramping up that campaign in advance of the next federal election and the BC provincial election as well, which of course is coming up in the spring, and really gathering people together to come together and say to their politicians and their candidates that we're voting on animal issues, and if you want our support, you have to take animals seriously.
Right, and people can find out about that on animaljustice.ca, correct?
Humanevoters.ca as well.
Okay. And last week, the BC Court of Appeal agreed to let Animal Justice intervene in a disturbing lawsuit designed to shut down animal advocates' freedom of expression, one that could end up being Canada's own version of ag gag laws. The Vancouver Aquarium is suing filmmaker Gary Charbonneau over alleged copyright violations for his documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. And if they win, it will cast a serious chill over those who investigate and expose incidents of animal cruelty. If someone obtains evidence of animal cruelty in facilities where filming is prohibited, such as factory farms, or if an employer demands that staff or volunteers sign contracts stating that they will not discuss what occurs at their place of employment, I'm curious to know how these freedom of expression protection laws would come into play. Would one be protected by law in this case, even though they violated rules at their place of employment?
Well, that always depends on the very particular facts of the case. And if anybody listening has evidence of animal cruelty in a facility like this, I encourage them to come to Animal Justice and we can help them expose that mistreatment. But what we're really seeing here in the Vancouver Aquarium case is kind of a broader trend of companies, of legislatures and governments trying to shut down the freedom of speech of animal advocates because they know that industries abuse animals in horrific ways. Every time we see footage from undercover factory farms, people eat less meat. They avoid engaging in behaviors that harm animals. Undercover footage is great for animal protection, and people really need to know what's going on. So, of course, industries have a vested interest in trying to shut that down. And we've, of course, seen this in the egg gag laws in the States, and I do feel like the Vancouver Aquarium case is the closest that we're getting to egg gag in Canada. So in that case, of course, many of your listeners will have seen Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, and they know that the film is quite critical of the aquarium and its practices of keeping cetaceans in captivity. And it goes through all of the ways that those animals suffer, the many deaths that have occurred at the aquarium. Obviously, the aquarium doesn't want this information to get out, and so they're looking for ways to shut down this film. And what they did in this case is they sought an injunction. They sued Mr. Charbonneau for making the film. And then, while the litigation's ongoing, they sought a temporary order to have the entire documentary removed from the internet. Now, fortunately, they weren't completely successful, but they did get an order from a judge that many of the segments in the film had to be deleted from it before the final litigation is settled and the case is considered on all of its merits. And to us, that's extremely chilling. If an industry can go and get a court order to shut down parts of a film, they could be doing this to people who film animal abuse undercover. They could be doing it to animal groups who could try to expose companies for animal abuses. And it could end up being a serious problem. And what we're saying is that copyright law in Canada, which the aquarium is using, is very protective of users' interests. And if you do not consider all of those issues, even at the stage of an injunction, then what you're essentially doing is giving industries and emboldening industries to try to shut down animal advocates. So when we go to the BC Court of Appeal, we're going to be telling this to the court and explaining to them why the court must always take into consideration users' rights to use allegedly copyrighted material in films, especially that expose animal abuse, because the animals have no voices of their own and we have to speak for them.
Right. Well, thank you so much for making the time for an interview on Animal Voices Radio today, Camille. Keep up the good work.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to make a donation to Animal Justice, you can visit their website at animaljustice.ca. And if you can't afford to donate, please share their website on your social media pages. I frequently visit your website, Camille, to see all the issues that you're working on. And it just makes me so proud to know you and Anna and everybody else who's fighting so hard for the animals.
Well, that's really kind of you to say. Animals desperately need a legal voice in this country. That's one of the key components of making social change, and we're glad to be able to provide that.
Absolutely. A nonprofit to boot. You are angels. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Today I'm interviewing the Director of Communications for a Vancouver organization called the Fur Bearers, formerly the Fur Bearer Defenders. Adrian Nelson has been with the organization for 7 years. Thanks for being here with us today, Adrian.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Fur Bearers organization?
So we've been around actually since about the 50s. We originally started with a mandate of, trying to find solutions for the inhumane traps that were out there. So the organization has been working on sort of the trapping and fur issue for many years now. And as we've grown and evolved, our mandate has changed slightly. We still do a lot of trapping issues, but we find that a lot of the fur now comes from fur farms. So we often take into, the cruelty behind fur farms and the whole fur, where it comes from. And we also do some coexistence campaigns. So we do, especially in the summer, spring and summer months, we do a lot of living with wildlife, finding non-lethal alternatives for dealing with wildlife.
Well, I've stopped by your office a few times to pick up informative leaflets, which I keep in my pocket everywhere I go in the fall and winter months. I hand them out to people wearing fur, and sadly, I run out of leaflets every day. It's common for me to see 20 fur trim jackets in my vicinity on a daily basis. Do you approach strangers in this manner?
We do from time to time, yeah. It's a real balancing act we find when we're talking to individuals about their buying choices and about, all the clothing that they wear. And we found that, those that can be approached respectfully, we do have some flyers here at the office. We've got a really great one that's sort of a thank you for not wearing fur. And a lot of people love handing that one out because it's not as confrontational. You don't have to get up in somebody's face and tell them how they're doing something wrong. You can say, hey, thank you for making a good choice and not, and here's some information that you should know about the fur industry. We also find that a lot of people, especially with the fur trim jackets, don't even realize where that fur came from. So quite often just a very polite, hey, was there a reason that you bought something with fur on it, and do you know the cruelty behind that? Often goes a long way just to, enlighten people. We have seen some activists that, go out, yelling and screaming at individuals, and how dare you wear that kind of a jacket? How dare you wear fur? Don't you know the cruelty? And that's really hard to start a meaningful conversation with somebody like that, because you're immediately putting them off. You're immediately putting them on the defensive. And it's very hard for them to open up and to accept what it is that you're saying. So we really love it when people just, take that calm approach like you do and just hand them a flyer and say, here's some information that, that you should probably know about your jacket.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to start a conversation, provided it's brought up in a, a meaningful manner.
Right. It is true that a lot of people are surprised when you tell them that the fur on their jackets is fake. And to be honest, 50% of the time, I think they're just saying that. But I do think there are people that honestly just don't know. And then when you tell them the details about the fur industry, for example, I keep a photo on my phone during the wintertime as my number one photo, so it's easy to find. And it's a coyote in a leg hold trap. And I will approach people in the Canada Goose jackets and I'll say, hey, I don't know if you know this, but this is how that jacket was obtained. And I tell them all the details about it. And in some cases, people get defensive. But in other cases, I've had some people near tears at hearing what I'm telling them. Because, of course, they don't get that full story when they buy the jacket, right?
Well, that's exactly it. And that's a great way to do it. Because, like you said, a lot of people don't even know. They may understand that it's fur or that it comes from a coyote. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes people just assume that it's fake, like you said. But even those that do understand it, not a lot of them understand how that's obtained. I think sometimes they, maybe believe some make-believe world where the coyote just dies of natural causes and donates its fur. I don't know. But a lot of people don't make that connection that there was pain and suffering that was involved.
Right. When I hear that excuse that people think they died of natural causes or that they were roadkill, believe it or not, people say that. I say, how could there be an entire brand called Coyote Goose, or sorry, Canada Goose, where their coats are in so many stores all across Canada and around the world, it wouldn't be possible to obtain that all from roadkill and natural caused deaths.
Well, that's obviously. Exactly it. Yeah, we're talking hundreds of thousands of jackets. You know, that's hundreds of thousands of roadkill. That's just, it's unbelievable.
Well, I even find it hard to believe that they're able to trap that many. I started to wonder if perhaps they even have a fur farm for these coyotes. What do you think about that?
It is alarming numbers, and it is something that we've looked at as well. You know, they're not very forthcoming with the sourcing of their materials. They say that it's, you know, coyotes, and coyotes are wildly caught and killed. The numbers that they would be producing for jackets makes us believe that they're probably not all coming from Canada, but that's hard to tell. Like, it may be, you know, there may be product bought in the United States as well. It's kind of unlikely for them to be farmed. Coyotes don't do well in a confined environment like that. And for that to happen, the amount of space that you would need to farm coyotes probably would make it very difficult. So I'm not sure if they would be using farmed animals, but it is an alarming number, and for them to be receiving all of that is makes us wonder where they are getting all of that fur from. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It would be interesting if there could be an undercover investigation into that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, can you tell us about the environmental impact of the fur industry?
Well, and that's a huge one that a lot of people don't look at. And unfortunately, the industry itself does a lot of greenwashing to make it look like they're, you know, they're a benefit to the environment, or that it's a natural product or whatever. When we take the cruelty part out of it and we just look at it from an environmental perspective, it is an environmental nightmare in itself. You know, there was some recent studies that were done that looked at the environmental impact of fur compared to other textiles. And they found that it was a bigger impact to the environment than most textiles out there. I think the only one that it came in under was the water usage for cotton, I think was the only one that was higher. Otherwise, the chemicals that are used in order to process coats are huge detriment to our environment. We're really talking about preserving the skin of an animal. You know, the hide of that animal has to stay intact for the fur to be usable. So we're talking about preserving the skin of an animal with, you know, formaldehydes and bleach agents and stuff like that, so that it doesn't decompose. And then all of that you're going to wear around your face, or it's going to go into the environment and everything else. We also see real problems with runoff and pollution in waterways around fur farms. Back east in Nova Scotia, they're having real problems with the runoff from the feces and the dead bodies and everything else that's associated with these fur farms. And it's literally turning the waters green out there. We've had incidences of lakes being completely unusable. We've had kids' camps that have had to close down because the kids can't even go swimming in the water anymore. And a lot of this is largely attributed to the fur farms out there. So there's a huge environmental impact beyond just the cruelty and the suffering that these animals face.
Interesting. And many Canadians don't know that cat, dog, and coyote fur makes its way into Canada from other countries. Cat and dog fur. And the Fur Bearer Defenders had lab testing done on some fur bought from local stores and online years ago and determined that it was, in fact, cat, dog, and coyote fur. Canadian law doesn't require accurate labeling for cat and dog fur. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so this is another one that a lot of people don't even realize, is that there is a large trade in cat and dog fur. An undercover investigation overseas found somewhere about 2 million dogs and cats were being killed every year for their fur, and this was finding its way into markets overseas. When that was found out, the United States, the European Union, Australia, Switzerland, quite a few countries basically put in bans to stop the import of dog and cat fur into the countries. Canada has refused to do that. So we are one of the few places that still allows this product to come in. And because there is no labeling laws here in Canada for fur in general, it falls through a loophole in the Labeling and Textile Act. So most people don't even realize what fur they're buying. So that was where we kind of set out to start trying to test some of this fur to see if we could figure out, you know, the type of animal that it was coming from, and if it wasn't labeled, how anybody, you know, could find out what it was that they were buying. One of the big problems we found is that, you know, we could do DNA tests, but we would get back, you know, that it was canine fur. So we knew that it was dog fur. The problem was we don't know what species. We don't know if that's coyote. We don't know if that's German Shepherd or wolf or what that is. So for the average consumer to know, it makes it, you know, almost impossible. You know, there are very, very expensive tests that can be done for mass spectrometry that can tell you a little bit more. But, you know, it's very expensive, even, you know, too expensive for a small group like us. So for the average consumer to know if they're buying dog fur or coyote fur, they have no idea.
Right.
And that being said, you know, it really doesn't matter that, you know, coyotes and wolves act just like, you know, the dogs we keep in our home and, you know, should be respected the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's really speciesist to expect people to care more about one than the other anyway. Regardless, I wish people would care that it's fur in general and not buy it.
Well, indeed.
Yeah. Well, if our listeners are interested in making a donation to the Fur Bearers, they may want to know about the great work that you do and what their money goes towards. So can you tell us a little bit about that and then maybe give us a link to your website?
Yeah, you bet. People can learn more about the association just at thefurbearers.com. And we have links there if people want to donate or get involved. The other great site that we've got if people are wanting to get more into the fur issue is makefurhistory.com. And that's a great resource for people that are wanting to find more about the fur industry. And there are links on that page to come back to the Fur Bearers. We also have all kinds of leaflets and stickers, hats, things like that, if people want to take a more proactive approach and educate others, or just to have some information on hand if you're talking to friends and family. So that's all available on our website there or by calling the office.
Right, and your office is right across from Mountain Equipment Co-op on Broadway.
Yep, right on Broadway here. We're at 179 West Broadway.
Awesome. And what are your days of operation?
We're here Monday to Friday. There's usually somebody in the office from, you know, anywhere from 8 to 6. But sometimes we are out in the field or, you know, dealing with politicians or who knows what. So it is always a good idea just to send us a quick note or give a call if you are going to stop by.
Well, you do great work. I was just noticing on your website today that you also educate kids. Do you want to just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we do have some humane education programs as well. We have a complete lesson plans from kindergarten to grade 12 that are available free of charge for teachers that want to implement some humane ed programs on living with wildlife and fur and things like that. We do often talks as well to different schools and community groups. So we'll go into schools and talk to kids about, you know, living with wildlife or fur issues or whatever it is that they're looking for. And in the summertime too, we've started a new hike program. So we've partnered with the Boys and Girls Club as well as the SPCA. We go to some of their summer camps and do nature walks with the kids. And we do sort of some family adventure nature walks as well for people to sign up on and learn and explore more of our natural wildlife around us.
That's awesome. You're doing so much great work. Thank you so much, Adrian, and thanks for making time.
So
yeah. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, October the 28th. It's going to be our annual special show for World Vegan Day, which happens on November the 1st. We'll be having a feature interview with Dr. Michael Greger next week on many topics about veganism, vegan nutrition, on his book that I'm still reading, How Not to Die. It's a really, really interesting book. And we'll also be featuring a segment about facing and dealing with social challenges in going vegan. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online, so you can go to animalvoices.org where you can stream our shows. You can download them from there too. You can subscribe to us via iTunes, stay in touch with us on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And you can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Just a reminder that we are in the midst of our fall member drive right now. So this is a time where we ask you to please show your support to Animal Voices and Co-op Radio. We are all volunteer run and we do rely on supporter and listener donations to keep our show on the air. So whatever you can afford, as I mentioned before, what we really love is sustaining memberships. And that is when you just get a little bit of money taken out of your bank account each month. And the reason why we prefer that is because then you never have to worry about renewing your membership. And then the radio station always has a guaranteed amount of income that they can rely on in order to keep everything running here at the station. So once again, you can go to cooperadio.org and click on make a donation there. You can also give us a call in about 4 minutes at 604-684-8494 and someone will take your phone call and take your donation over the air. That's 604-684-8494. Now, the song that we are ending with today is a song by B.B. King called Chains and Things. Jen, can you tell us why you chose this song?
Our closing song is one of my all-time favorites. It's Chains and Things by the late blues legend B.B. King. This song is relevant to our show today because of the coyotes caught in leg hold traps that are chained to the ground for Canada Goose jackets. The opening lyrics say, "Woke up this morning after one of those crazy dreams. Oh, nothing is going right this morning. The whole world is wrong, it seems. Oh, I guess it's the chains that bind me. I can't shake it loose, these chains and things."
Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
After another one of those crazy dreams. Oh, nothing is going right this morning. The whole world is wrong, it seems. Oh, I guess it's the chains that bind me. I can't shake or lose these chains and things. I got a cold-hearted, wrongdoing woman and a slave-driving boss. I can't lose these chains that bind me. Can't shake or loose these chains and things. Just can't lose these chains and things.
shame.